Hello, and welcome to the Dress in Splendor podcast. Luke 12:27 states, "Look at how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these." Our mission here is to share stories from men and women that can help you learn how to stop laboring or striving after what you want to accomplish, but rather to trust in your heavenly creator to guide you in your everyday life. If he has a plan for you, he will make a way. All he wants is our daily yes to him and for us to stop worrying about what tomorrow will bring. If we can do that, then we, as children made in his image, can be dressed in even grander splendor than the beautiful wildflowers of the field. I'm your host, Lydia Summer, and I'm so glad you're here today. Before we begin, I'd love to ask for you to take a moment to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts and hit that subscribe button. This really helps drive us up the charts and helps share empowering and encouraging testimonies with people like you. Thank you so much for your support. And I am so excited about our guest today. We have author of the hybrid series, Candace Cade, joining us, and we dive into the process of her world building, how her living in China, then the States, helped write the narrative of what it feels like to not belong, the family dynamics in her own life as well as in the books, some insights as to what's coming up in her last installment of her series, and wonderful advice for those who want to follow a similar career path as her own. You won't want to miss out on this encouraging conversation. Welcome to the Dress in Splendor podcast. Let's get started. It is such an honor to have you on here.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So Candace, I think that it's safe to say that most of my listeners probably don't know who you are, not because they're not readers, but I think that young adult books are actually becoming more in style. And so people are trying to catch up. So I would love to just have you share a little bit more about who you are for our listeners who don't know you.
Sure. So a little bit about me. When I was 4 years old, my family moved from Cleveland, Ohio to Changsha, China. And I grew up in China, attending local Chinese school in the mornings and then being homeschooled in the afternoons in my English studies. And that was pretty much my upbringing from four until graduating high school when I came back to the United States. And so, you know, going to Chinese school, I was the only American there. And even though I spoke the language and ate the food and wore the same uniform as them, I don't look Chinese. And so I always felt like I didn't quite belong. And then on the flip side, when I came back to the United States for college, I had never really lived here for a significant amount of time and didn't really feel like I belonged here either, even though people assumed I did. And so that plays a big role in why I write YA, young adult novels. I love writing sort of these themes of culture and belonging and identity and finding yourself in those young adult years, because that was very challenging for me. So came back to the United States, though, for college. Attended Southern Nazarene University in Oklahoma, where I got my master's degree or my bachelor's degree in mass communication. Realized I was sort of a jack of all trades, masters of none. And so I wanted to go to grad school and went to Texas A&M University and then ended up working in Austin at Dell Technologies. And then went on a relocation assignment to China. And I had been writing this whole time fantasy novels, loved writing, was so passionate about it. But went back to Beijing and started writing sci-fi and actually ended up writing my debut novel, which is set in a futuristic Beijing while I was living there. And then came back to the States right before COVID hit, got married the day of the COVID lockdowns.
Whoa, oh my gosh.
And then quit my day job 6 months later at the height of COVID to pursue publishing full time, and then got my publishing contract from Enclave about a year later. And now the trilogy is complete and book three is about to release.
Yeah, which we'll talk about in a second, but I'm glad you talked about your feeling of not belonging in either country. I have actually had a conversation with someone else who lived in a different country as well, and I am an Army brat myself, so I was born in France, lived in Belgium, so the first 8 years of my life, I just, it was weird because I, as you said, you've acclimated to the culture, but even though I looked like them, you know, because they're European,
it seemed like they knew I was American, that I didn't really belong with them as well. And then going back over to America, I was teased for pronouncing things in the correct pronunciation with croissant and things like that. And so
it sounds so fancy, though.
I know. But now, and people just, I work at Starbucks, and anyone who says that in that correct term, they're like, oh, that's so pretentious. And I'm like, but that's like right, you know? It's funny how things like it, as you said, you don't really belong in either place. As I was reading this, I can definitely see the struggle with our heroine Urban, who does have that, you know, where do I belong kind of feeling. Talking about your series, we see that Urban kind of struggles with feeling of belonging as a natural, pretending to be enhanced. And we'll talk about that. I've read all your books, so I'm excited about it. I know everything. I'm not going to spoil anything, but how did you find that belonging in struggling between both cultures and both worlds?
I think it's very much Urban's journey was my own. And, you know, I said I wrote it when I went back to China, and I was very much figuring out as an adult, do I want to live here? Do I want to belong among the Chinese culture, or do I want to go back to America? Is there a way that I can embrace both? I was very much wrestling with it when I wrote it at the time. So it wasn't even an intentional thing that slipped in there. But I realize a lot of times what I'm writing after I read it, after the fact when I'm done, I go back and read it. And I realized, oh, that's very much something that I was thinking about at the time. But for me, you know, one of the things we see with Urban that's reflected in my own life is she's trying to get that external validation. In her case, she's trying to figure out, do I belong among the enhanced? Do I belong among naturals? Will they accept me? And she's trying to get that validation externally. And for me, it was the same way. For the longest time, I was trying to be American. Am I American enough? Or, you know, am I Chinese enough? And ultimately realizing that acceptance starts with ourselves. Like, we have to realize it's okay. Like, I may not be fully American, or I may mispronounce croissant, you know, yeah. I may do things a little differently, but that's okay. You know, and even thinking about it from a spiritual lens, like in the Bible, it says this world is not our home, right? Like, we do not belong here. We actually belong to another kingdom. And so even at a spiritual level, I think everyone at some level is going to feel like they don't belong at some point, because this world is not meant to be our long-term home. Heaven is, and to be with God is. And so for me, it's a lot of just starting with myself and starting with God, and not caring so much what others think about me and if I mispronounce things or don't feel like I quite fit in.
Yeah. And I think to add on, as you were talking, I was just thinking of my own experience of that same feeling of, you know, I when I was doing missions myself, I almost had this come to Jesus moment in a way where I was just questioning him, like, even down to how I look, like, Lord, why did you make me with brown hair, brown eyes? Because I have a sister who looks just like me, but she has blue eyes, and I was always envious of her, and which seems so silly now, but, you know, or like, why do I have such a desire to be in these places and things like that. And he was just speaking to my heart and saying, like, I made you like this so that you could be more accepted amongst these countries and these cultures, because I blend in more easily. You know, I'm not, besides my height, which the Filipinos loved when I was over there, I was very surprised, but, you know, I am, you know, Asians will not blink an eye at me if I am over there, because I'm not blonde hair, blue eyed, light skin, things like that. So I think in that sense, it's like God makes us in that way, like, you know, we all have something different in us. As you said, none of us probably feel like we belong in a sense. But for those of us who feel in that way of like stuck in between two worlds, I think there's a purpose for that. Because for you, it's to write these books. And, you know, I really don't think that anyone, unless you are a believer, can sense those Christian themes. And maybe that would have someone who doesn't believe, who reads these books and say, there's something to this. I wonder what this means, and digging deeper into that. So, and I am curious, you know, I guess with your upbringing too, did you start reading like fantasy books when you were young? Did you always, I mean, you said like you've always written these kind of stories, you know, was that something that you were like really interested in? I'm assuming maybe when you were in Asia, you were very interested into like some of their shows and all that. So I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's funny because I actually had a very rough start to reading and writing because, you know, I started off the first couple of years we were in China. My mom just homeschooled me the first few years, and then they put me in Chinese school when I was 7. And so those first few years, my mom had to teach me how to read and write, and I fought her tooth and nail. I made a promise to her. I was like, I will never need to know how to read or write, which of course now she's like, interesting. You're now an author. But I'm very stubborn. And I'm very determined. And I fought her on that. But yeah, so I initially hated it, which is funny. But then once my mom overcame that hurdle and taught me how to read, then I just loved it. But I read a lot of mystery novels, you know, Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boy series, all these mystery novels. And then I did really like fantasy novels and then historical. That was sort of I loved those genres. But then it wasn't until high school, I had written, you know, small short stories, or I'd attempted several novels multiple times, but always got stuck. And then it wasn't till high school when I read a novel and realized the author was actually a high schooler that I realized, oh, I can do this. If a high schooler has published one of my favorite novels, then I can do this too. And so I started working on just plotting and outlining and sat down to write this new novel. And it just, writing came alive to me and I fell in love with it. And that's when I realized I want to be an author someday. Like I feel called to be an author, and not in the sense that, you know, God said, you will be an author for the rest of your life or anything like that. But I just think about, I don't remember whose quote this is, but they say, you know, where the world's greatest need and your greatest passion overlap, like that is God's calling for your life. And I couldn't stop thinking about writing, and just, I was so passionate about it. And I just knew, like, this is what I'm going to do someday. And I think ever since then, it's just been figuring out the craft of it and trying to figure out, how do I get there?
Yeah. So jumping into the hybrid series with urban and everything like that, I am always in awe of people who are able to world build and just, you know, create these amazing stories, and, you know, wondering, like, how the heck did you come up with this? So just walk us through that. Like, how did urban come to life in your mind? And did you always have that kind of like vision for her and her story?
World building is my favorite part. I love world building. But no, I think for me, it comes in layers. I don't just sit down at a blank page and be like, this robust world building comes to me. I just kind of store away ideas over years as they come. And so the initial inklings for the idea, this world where everyone has genetic enhancements, was based off of CRISPR gene editing technology, which exists today. And so I was just listening to a podcast episode about it and learning about it. And I was just blown away by what current science and technology can do with it. And I kept thinking, what will our world look like 100 years down the road if this technology takes off? If people can choose the down to the last genetic strand, like the last DNA strand, what they want their children to look like, what will that world be like? I think that half of the world will be really well off, and they have all these amazing genetic enhancements for their kids, you know, enhanced immune systems, strengthened bones, greater intellect. And then those who are too poor to afford them will be born naturally without any. And so I'd always had this idea for a story in my mind. But again, I've been working on this fantasy novel that I started in high school, and just figuring out all the mistakes that you make in a first novel, grinding on it for 10 years. And then it wasn't until I went back to China that I thought, you know what, I'm tired of working on this fantasy novel. I want to work on something else. And I'd always wanted to write something inspired loosely just by my time in China. And so I thought back to my repository of world building ideas and plot ideas, and this one kept sticking out to me. And so I combined that idea of genetic enhancements with what if it was set in a futuristic Beijing society Asian society, what would that world look like? And then that's how I came up with the world for the hybrid series.
Are some of the places that you mention actual places that you go to in China?
Most of them, yes, for while I was living there, yeah.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, I'm glad to read it. And, you know, honestly, I think that I've actually learned a little bit of Chinese as well, just from how many of the words that you've incorporated and being like, oh, okay, I know what this means now. And so
I love that. That makes me so happy.
Could I pronounce it? Probably not. But I actually spent 3 weeks in China for an opera kind of like workshop when I was in college. Oh. And it was super cool and loved it. But I, you know, I thought, oh, maybe I'll pick up on something. And the only thing I could say was shisha, you know, that's it. And I probably even saying that wrong. So, and
no, you got it.
And so, and well, I mean, I guess I said it well enough because someone tried to continue talking to me in Chinese or Mandarin at a grocery store. And I was like, no, I'm just trying to be nice. That's all I can say.
I mean, that was my problem when I first started going to Chinese school and learning Mandarin. The first phrase I learned was 我听不懂, which means I don't understand. But then, of course, everyone's like, well, you're speaking Mandarin, so I'm going to follow it up with more questions. And you're like, no, I don't understand.
I loved that you incorporate that into your books. And I think that it's really great to just, you know, experience other cultures even through writing and not to keep it to I mean honestly I never think of any certain kind of race when I'm reading fantasy or sci-fi books anyway. It just kind of like the characters and especially how they're described, that's how I see them in my mind. But I mean, as you mentioned in your book too, just kind of shifting of like with even with the people they get to, I mean, I'd love to talk about the retina displays, like in what they're wearing. Is it basically just like contacts that they're wearing and they can like see, you know? That was a very, very cool idea. How did you come up with that? Because I'm just not smart enough to think about that kind of stuff. So
No. I think it was a combination of I worked at a technology company. So we were talking about AI. We were talking about all these tech trends way before they exploded. And then a lot of my coworkers and good friends are cybersecurity analysts or hackers, not hackers, but on the flip side of it, prevention from hackers. You know, there are people who work at Amazon. There are people who work at IBM, all these different tech companies. And then I also have a lot of friends and family members who are doctors, who are in more of the science realm of things. And so a lot of conversations would happen around some of these emerging technologies. And then also going back to China after nearly 10 years of living in the United States. And I had, of course, visited, but going back and living, it was wild how much things had changed. Because when I grew up there, you know, smartphones weren't a thing. The internet was just starting up. I had an email account. That was about it, right? Versus now, you know, I feel like we're much more global citizens. But and again, going back to why it was hard to come back to the United States, I didn't have TikTok to show me, you know, what songs are trending or what are people wearing in United States. I didn't have that, right? But then coming to China 10 years later, everyone had a smartphone and no one used cash. They all used their phones for everything. And so I kind of felt like I had stepped into this time portal where I had just been transported to the future. China had just grown so much in the technology they were using. And so that kind of fueled a lot of these technological advancements we see in the hybrid series, was just thinking about, again, what will this world look like 100 years down the road? So retina displays, it just seemed like a very convenient thing that we should have, but we don't. So it just kind of, I don't know, plopped itself in there. A lot of the technology, the CRISPR gene editing was planned up front. But I feel like a lot of it just kind of came as I was writing it and as I was immersed in it.
So with the family, the Lee family, you see a lot of tension with her and her family members. And the closest relationship she has is with her, who she was adopted with, Lillian, you know. And I think that we can probably see our own kind of tension that we can have with our families as well. As you were writing this, and of course, there are a lot of things that grow within your series. So did you plan that as well? Like, how did you want to be able to share the real struggles, which you do? And I think I really appreciate that, because it's not like a picture perfect family. It seems like one from the outside, of course, as they are a very high social kind of family. You know, how did you want to incorporate the struggles of that and to be able to grow and almost kind of redeem that?
So the backstory to Urban's family is really interesting, because I actually had the backstory for her family planned out even before I had heard of CRISPR and that sort of idea. I had this character. And so I had thought about, I wanted her to be adopted, and I wanted it to be this complex relationship. But then when I wrote the first draft and I had some of my early critique partners read it, it came off very cliche and tropey. It just felt like the classic, oh, you know, orphan adopted into a family, everyone's mean to her, like the stepsister, sort of the Cinderella story. And it just felt way too cliche and flat and not very realistic. And so I was really grateful for my critique partners pointing that out. And I realized, oh yeah, like I should push myself to make this a more complex relationship and make this more interesting. And so then I started plotting out more of, okay, I want this to be a redeemed relationship, and I want it to have, yeah, complexities, because no family is perfect, but I want to show how this family can be redeemed. And what's really interesting is, after I had written that first draft, I believe somewhere around that time, my family, my parents actually adopted my two brothers. I have two adoptive brothers from Ukraine. So then it was even more inspiration to write this as a redemption story, because it was initially hard. They came to America as teenagers, like speaking Ukrainian and no English. My oldest, youngest adoptive brother, I have four brothers total. But he was about to age out of the system. He was 17. Hmm. And so, you know, that was extremely hard for him. And that, was really hard for all of us to try and mesh this, our weird quirks of having lived in China and having a lot of Asian tendencies, to their, like, you know, European, Ukrainian tendencies. You know, sometimes we're in public, if we don't want people to understand us, half the family speaking Mandarin, the other half is like Ukrainian. So we're a very interesting family.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so after that happened too, there is even more fuel for me to want to write an adoptive family that showed complexities, but then that showed redemption. And honestly, that's very reflective of our own family. Like, it was very challenging initially, but, you know, now they speak great English and they're doing great, and we gel together as a family.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like, the relationships that Urban has with everyone, with her friends, with Everest, that's all complicated in a sense as well. And that also just shows the reality. I think a lot of people tend to over romanticize, you know, friendships and relationships and things like that. Now, jumping to the augmented book, like, how, I know that if those who are familiar with your books, like, what can people expect to see in that third book, with just anything that you're able to share? I mean, I'd love to just have you just kind of dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So book one, Enhanced, is all about Urban living in New Beijing's metropolis among the elite Enhanced and going to Peking University for the first time, even though she's a natural and she has to hide the fact that she doesn't have any genetic enhancements or be really deadly for her and her family. So book one is about figuring out her place in university. And then it's very much that wrestling with, am I a natural? Am I Enhanced? Sort of this, where do I belong? Internal struggle. Hybrid is more about family, and the cracks in her family begin to show a little bit more. They start to break down. But we also see some of those relationships. I'm trying so hard not to give spoilers. Some of those relationships tie up, but others get worse. And we get to see the Western Federation and a little bit more of that world. And then book three is about really wrapping up some of the family relationships. You really get to see a lot more of that healed and behind the scenes for why some of the people are the way they are. But then it also, just on a side note, that's super fun. We get to go to New Sichuan, which is where I grew up, was Sichuan.
Oh, cool.
We kind of bounced around different parts of China, but Sichuan is where we spent the most time and I consider my home. So it's just a really fun setting because Sichuan is just a great place. It's known for like its spicy hot pot and its beautiful mountains. And we just get to see a lot of that in Augmented. And then also just the theme of Augmented is brokenness to wholeness. And I really love, so Urban is an artisan and she loves practicing different art forms. And I love in book three, what her mentor is teaching her, the art form is kintsugi, which is, a Japanese art form where you break these ancient tea wares and then you glue them back together with this sort of golden glue. And it's just showcasing, you know, these broken pieces are actually more beautiful when they're pieced together and infused with this gold. And using that as an analogy for Urban's life, but really all of our lives, right? As believers, like God says he uses all things for good. And so these pieces of our lives that may just feel shattered, broken, hopeless, like God is piecing those back together into something beautiful. And so that is the theme of Augmented that I really am excited for.
I mentioned that some of our listeners are probably catching up and reading young adult fantasy or young adult sci-fi. And I used to read so many of those books. I read James Patterson's Maximum Ride books when I was in high school. Loved that. It actually kind of reminded me a little bit about that with the enhancements of the flyers and things like that, except I guess they get to avoid as enhanced when they're younger, the pain of what, you know, in Maximum Ride books have to do with. But reading your books and for Urban to be stuck in between the hybrid and enhanced world and everything. You know, of course, we can assume that people don't know this in the books, but it seems like trouble just seems to find her wherever she goes. And it just seems to kind of to really like, I don't know, it does strengthen and build her. But do you think that it's really just because people have kind of figured out that she is a natural living in an enhanced world, and kind of, I guess, talk a little bit more about the tension between the natural and the enhanced?
Yeah, well, I mean, naturals are definitely frowned upon living in the metropolis. You're not supposed to go there unless you're a maid or you have like, you know, some sort of working position. And so she's not supposed to be living where she's living with a highly enhanced elite family with a very high social credit score, right? So that's not allowed. And so if that were to be discovered, that's very dangerous. And, you know, even in her very, I think this is in chapter one, right? There's a hacker who breaks into her job situation and gives her a mysterious box. And then ever since then, it kind of kicks off these series of events where she's being followed and there's more hackers, people are leaving her mysterious messages. And so there definitely are a lot of strange things happening. And it's not really clear if that's because she's been figured out and someone's trying to protect her, or someone's trying to kill her, or there's some other third option. I won't give spoilers, but those are kind of the potential reasons why she could be in danger as a natural kind of hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, because as you're reading this, you're like, man, gosh, this is just, she can't catch a break. So
poor Urban, she went through a lot.
She has. So yeah, but I just wanted to talk about that briefly, just because, you know, I think that our readers are going to really get invested in everything that Urban goes through and things like that. So hopefully they enjoy the series just as much as I have. And as I mentioned, I just really love your books and love how it brought me back to my love for just reading young adult fantasy, sci-fi, all that kind of dystopian type of books. So thank you for being obedient to the Lord and, you know, getting over potential fears, I'm sure, of just writing and publishing and putting that out there. And I'm sure that there, I mean, yeah, I guess like really briefly, was it a struggle to publish those books, or were you able to find a you know, for those who maybe want to follow a similar path, like were you able to find like a publisher pretty quickly?
I mean, it was definitely a long journey. I mentioned I knew I wanted to do this in high school, and it took almost 2 decades to get there. And I think there was, you know, you mentioned fear, and I think that's a great thing to talk about, because I noticed in high school I started to become a fearful person, and I knew if I wasn't careful, well, I noticed some fearful tendencies, and I knew if I wasn't careful, I would become a fearful person. And as a believer, I just felt like there's no place for that. Like, if the God of the Bible is real, then I do not need to be afraid. And so I made a promise to myself when I was leaving China and going back to the States for college, which felt very scary coming to this near foreign land. And I just made a promise to myself that I would never back out of something because I was afraid of it. I would give God a chance to come through for me. And of course, if it's something that was dangerous that I was afraid of, obviously I'm not going to do that. But if it was something like, you know, speaking to a school or something, and it was a great opportunity, I wouldn't say no just because I was afraid of speaking or something like that. And so God is just, I feel like, took me up on that promise, because my college years, I basically faced every one of my worst fears. I was deathly afraid of surgery. I was deathly afraid of speaking in public. I feel like all my worst fears, like, they happened within that college time. And so college was not the best time of my life, but I came out of it realizing, like, oh, I've faced all my worst fears and God got me through those. And so I think a very similar thing happened with publishing. You know, I mentioned I was working at Dell. I had a great job. I really enjoyed it. But I knew that I was called to be a writer. And I just felt like every year I was just praying, like, God, when can I leave my job to be a writer? Like, I want to do it. And it just didn't happen until COVID, the height of COVID. I was still praying this prayer and I felt peace for the first time. I felt like I could finally leave my job and pursue this. And at that point, I said, whoa, 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 hold on. Like, people are losing their jobs. This is a really scary, uncertain time. Maybe I don't want to leave my job, but I felt peace about it. And so I talked to, you know, some of my creative mentors, some of my business mentors, my family, my husband, and continue to pray about it, and just felt like, no, like, this is God's timing. And so I did. I had been writing for many, many years, but quit my job and spent that extra time just really investing in the craft, getting critique partners, having them, you know, swapping manuscripts with them, and they would critique my work, I would critique theirs. And that really elevated my writing. And then after a year of doing that, I felt ready to start really querying and trying to get an agent and trying to get published. And so my first writing conference, I pitched to a bunch of different editors and agents, and all of them requested my full manuscript. And one of the acquiring editors is the one from my current publisher, Enclave. They ended up giving me a 3-book deal. So it seemed like once the ball started rolling, it happened very fast. But I mean, things had been going on in the works, me practicing and working on my craft for many, many years before it actually happened.
Well, it's an incredible story, and hopefully really encouraging for those who want to follow a similar path. And, you know, in light of that, I want to ask you the same question I ask all of my listeners. With being dressed in splendor in accordance with Luke 12:27, as children made in God's image, we should be dressed in greater splendor. So what's some advice that you would give to those who want to follow a similar path to your own, and how they can be dressed in greater splendor than the wildflowers of the field?
The number one I would say is just trust God's timing. I am one of those people who has a to-do list for every single day. I'm a planner. I like to know what's going on. And so I think especially if you're a planner type, it can be hard sometimes to trust God's plan and God's timing. And so for me, there are just so many moments when I look back over, you know, this whole time trying to get published, where I was just asking God, like, why isn't this happening? Or why am I stuck at this job? Or, you know, just so many things that I questioned God about over many years. But looking back, like, his timing was perfect. Every single thing that happened, you know, my time in my corporate career, I value that so much. I had so many amazing relationships and people that I got to spend so much time with, and I got to develop my craft. I got to learn the marketing side of things, which as an author is very important. And I got to go back to China, which I never would have gotten that opportunity if they hadn't sent me, and Enhance would never have happened, right? And then even COVID, and, you know, before that every year asking God if I could quit my job, and God just kind of shutting the door on that. And then COVID, him opening the door. And the part I didn't mention actually just now was during COVID, my company was having these layoffs, and I didn't know about this. But once I felt peace to leave Dell, I told my VP, and he said, well, actually, we're about to have layoffs. And so if you want to take voluntary severance, then we can save someone else a job and you can get paid to leave. So God's timing is so perfect. When he finally said, yes, go ahead, pursue this, I got paid to leave my job to do that. So I would not encourage you to leave your job. I do not advise that to most people. But what I would say is just trust God's timing. You know, it took many, many years, but like God's timing was perfect. And there's so many other things I don't have time to get into, but I am just so grateful that God opened the publishing door for me now. It was truly the perfect timing. So trust God's timing. I know it's so, so hard. And I even still wrestle with this, right? Like it's hard, but just remembering like, oh, looking back at my own life, God has always been so faithful and his timing is always perfect.
Yeah. Well, that is incredible advice. Thank you for sharing that. And I am so looking forward for people to hearing about your books, possibly for the first time or reading your last book of the series. And I cannot wait to even see hopefully more of you in the future. And that we can have more conversations, which would be amazing. And, you know, just before we wrap up, I would just love if you could share where people can find you and your books.
You can find me at CandiceCade.com. You can sign up for my newsletter there. I give young adult book recommendations in my newsletter, or I'm most active on Instagram, Candice Cade Author.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. I'll put everything in the show notes. Candice, it was such a joy to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you everyone for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.